Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
All right, welcome back to the Solid Verbal. Ty Hildebrandt, Dan Rubenstein. It is day two. Thank you. Day two here at the
BCS
totally Media
Look
Hotel.
He's got the new coat. He's got the dark jeans and the dark watch.
I got this last year before we did our live show.
This isn't an accident.
I haven't broken it. It's been a full year. I haven't broken it, which is a new thing for me.
Can I say now who I realize he's a dead ringer for?
Absolutely.
Uncle Nate of Johnny Manziel fame.
Have you ever met Uncle Nate?
I've met him a bunch personally? Of times. And I think if you wanted to, you could try to sneak your way into some bars in a couple of days from now that
in
you couldn't get
station.
Into normally. No, here,
okay,
when Johnny Manziel surfaces in L.A.
Sure.
And I think you could pass yourself as Uncle Nate.
So what is his likability compared to mine? Like, I've met you a few times. You sort of have an idea for what I am. I like?
Because he has to be able to pass off.
Well, he's
like
a little more charismatic than you. But. He actually is a big watch guy because I think that's the family business.
Okay.
So, but he's younger. I mean, you know, so
more charismatic.
Ty actually looks younger than he is. I feel like that's.
Yeah.
I feel like he could pass off late 20s.
I still get carded at our movies sometimes.
But he's 21. I mean, you know,
that's tougher. That's going to be tougher.
But all you guys are similar sizes. You know, similar hairstyles.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. Full head of hair, Ty Hildebrandt.
Well, I'm quitting the podcast now. I'm going to be an Uncle Nate ringer.
You can
be my new profession.
That's a lifelong impersonator of an assistant of a quarterback.
Seems legit.
Very lucrative.
But if you're in the wrong part of college station like this fall, you probably would have gotten attacked.
Yeah, that is also true.
Important safety tip from Bruce Feldman. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to have you back. There's been a lot going on in college football other than this game. We can start with that. A lot of coaches seem to be on the move. I guess the latest news that we just saw break, I don't even know if it's news yet, but seems to be a lot of smoke around Al Golden to Penn State. Is that something you see happening? What's the latest that you've heard on that?
You know, I haven't heard anything definitive one way or the other. And the person who I saw, you know, people were tweeting, I actually had never heard of. And people inside University of Miami had actually never heard of.
It's a Miami radio guy.
Yeah. But even people like plugged in there didn't know. So that doesn't mean it's not right. Cause it could be. But... You know, if he's going to kick the tires on that job and the longer the delay, like people I know at UM had been in the dark on that staff. They didn't know what was going on. They haven't heard anything. So, I mean, it is home for him. Whenever these jobs with his name's gotten, you know, kicked around, I've always heard from people who work closely with him that his family actually really likes Miami and the situation there. He has been through a lot to get through all the sanctions stuff and everything.
Right.
And now if he goes to Penn State, he's going back like three steps on that because they're getting, you know, even if they get a lot of scholarship relief in addition to what they already have, it's already, you know, it's a position where Miami's not at. So... But by the same token, he comes in, you know, he could say, I could be here for 10 years.
Right.
I'm committed to this to go through it. It's basically Bill O'Brien has taken off some of the heat of replacing the guy,
right.
You know, component of
He's
it.
He's the guy after the guy.
Yeah. And I think there's people who would look at it and go, well, Bill O'Brien, there's probably some people who are really down on him there because they felt like he betrayed them by going to the NFL. So Al Golden comes in, he could be kind of the savior there. You know, I think his experience of having worked through a lot of crap at Miami with the NCAA stuff probably bodes well for them. You know, the question I would have if I was a Penn State fan is he actually has not done much on the field at Miami.
Right.
You know, for all the talk about, you know, how well he's done off the field, and I think he's done well, his teams haven't proven anything. I mean, they played six ranked teams in the last 2 years. The one team they beat who was ranked was Florida, and they, you know, Florida turned it over a bunch of times, and Florida turned out to be like 4-8.
Yep.
The other five teams beat Miami by a combined score of 40-12, and Miami has more talent than that. They looked awful against Louisville the other night. They did not look well prepared. You know, if he did leave, I think there's a lot of Miami people who'd be glad that he did leave.
So then it's interesting because it sort of plays into the whole narrative that Penn State, I don't want to say feel scorned by Bill O'Brien going to the NFL, but they knew he had NFL pedigree in him. They knew that he ultimately may have ambition to go back to the NFL. Sort of plays into the narrative of, hey, we want a Penn State guy. Someone who knows Penn State, someone who understands Penn State, someone who's more committed to the college game and maybe not quite as accomplished on the field.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something to be said for, you know, not having to look over your shoulder and have a guy who's going to get itchy or may renegotiate or whatever. The question again is, you know, can this guy actually get it done on the field? In a lot of ways, he was ideal for Miami to shepherd the program through the self-sanctioning part.
It's a force of personality.
Yeah, and he's very organized. He's, I mean, that's the one thing that really sold the old UMAD was how organized he was. And he did a good job of kind of managing all that. Now, we'll see. This is the best recruiting class, the one that's going to be signed, you know, whatever, 6 weeks from now, mm-hmm. that he's been involved with. We'll see if it holds up if he were to leave. But all these other things about just actually on the field and having a team prepared and playing well, I mean, the jury is still out. I mean, you could look at what he did at Temple, and he won a bunch of games.
Right.
But it was hard to find really quality wins on that. And the ACC is not a great league. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I'm curious to see how this is going to play out this weekend.
And, of course, you mentioned Miami losing like they did to Louisville, Louisville joining the ACC shortly. Louisville's going through their own situation, potentially, maybe, probably. We don't know. It's another smoke and fire situation. Charlie Strong rumored to be in deep discussions with Texas, at least at the time we're recording this. Do you see that moving forward? Do you think that is a move that is a fit for both schools if it were to happen? What is your general read on the situation in Austin?
You know, as of last night, when I talked, as of Friday night, when I talked to somebody who's pretty plugged in on the search side of it, that they didn't really know how this was going to play out. You know, I know a lot of people had reported that it was a done deal or close to a done deal, and clearly, you know, we're deep into Saturday and it's not.
Right.
But I think it's a curious fit. You know, Charlie Strong is, you know, not the opposite of Al Golden in this regard, that he has done well in games. Now, they didn't beat, you know, they weren't in a good league and they didn't beat UCF, but, you know.
Neither did the Big 12 champ.
Yeah, and they struggled last year against Syracuse, and I forgot, maybe UConn, but they mm-hmm. did, you know, they did well in bowl games, so they finished with a flourish. The part where it doesn't make sense to me is Charlie Strong does not deal well with the media. He is not an embracing the media guy. Mm-hmm. He's going into the Longhorn Network if he were to take the job,
right.
Which has a lot of responsibilities for that are unlike any other job. Then there's the component of Charlie Strong, from what I'm told, wasn't very good with dealing with boosters and didn't want to deal with some of the peripheral money people.
Texas is nothing but peripheral.
And right. That's it. I mean, you went from like a program that, and also he's at a school, Louisville, which has a strong AD.
Right.
He's going to a place, if he were to take the Texas job, if that has a really muddled situation around it. I mean, it's a curious hire, I think, for a lot of different reasons. And if he took the job, he'd be replacing a guy who is excellent with boosters and is pretty good with the media and really tried.
Right.
And even he wore thin on the responsibilities and the obligation of the Longhorn Network and everything that was, you know, kind of pushed towards him.
So if not Charlie Strong, then who? Do they wait post Jimbo and FSU?
I think James Franklin would make a lot of sense to them. I mean, as we speak, he's, you know, his team is killing Houston.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And they're going to probably finish in the top 25 for the second time in his 3
Another
years.
Another 9-win year.
And people can say, well, they don't have a ton of quality wins. And, yeah, when they beat Georgia, Georgia was 15, but Georgia's not all that good. It's Vandy. You know, mm-hmm. Vandy was awful before he got there. I mean, and it's in a much tougher league than some of these other guys are in. He's also the guy who I think, you know, does handle the spotlight extremely well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from that regard, I think that he would make a lot of sense. And I think if you're Texas, you may get luck yourself into him. But, you know, who knows? I mean, by the time this thing probably airs, we'll probably have an answer.
Well, and hypothetically, again, by the time this thing airs, a lot could change. But let's say Strong takes Texas. Let's say all of a sudden the Texas job isn't there for James Franklin. What is his next move then? There's been some interest apparently from the NFL. Mm-hmm. Is that his next move? Is there another job coming open that he'd be a good fit for? How does it all play out for him?
I don't know. I think he's going to have some good options. I mean, he coached in the NFL for a little bit. He is a guy who has Northeast ties. Now, I don't mm-hmm. know what's going to happen with Penn State, but he's a guy who has some energy to him. And I think that could play pretty well there. But he's also a guy who's on the NFL's radar.
Right.
You know, and I think Vanderbilt has actually done a nice job stepping up its commitment there.
Right.
But how long, you know, if you're at Vanderbilt, can you stay there and elevate the program? This isn't Oregon we're talking
There's
about.
There's a ceiling.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like I remember going through there like a year and a half ago, and Herb Hand, who you know, I spent the day with him. We were talking about how the program, you know, kind of the example of Stanford. But the only thing is, Stanford's in the Pac-12.
Mm-hmm.
Vandy's in the SEC, and the bar is way higher than that. And Stanford also had been good. John Elway played at Stanford. Mm-hmm. You have a bunch of guys who came, you know, Jim Plunkett won a Heisman at Stanford. Nobody was doing
They were in Rose Bowls relatively recently.
Yeah, within the last 12 years. Nobody was doing anything at Vanderbilt. So, I mean, there's been a few good players, but it's just not the same. Now, it's a cool town and everything like that, but you know, I think it's hard to say I'm going to be there for 5 years because you look at this is the year he beat Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee all in the same year.
All down.
Now, Georgia's not as down as those other two, but when is that ever going to happen again? Tennessee's not going to be down for very long.
Right.
Tennessee is on the way up. Like, I think they lucked out by Charlie Strong not taking that job and doing that dance last year, and they backed into Butch Jones.
Right.
They're lucky that that happened. I think Florida, you know, either he's going to figure it out next year or somebody else is going to figure it out 2 years from now at Florida. So that brings you back to, you know, how long do you stay at Vandy?
All right, and we'll go into two teams that certainly could not stay down for all that long, Florida State and Auburn. Playing here Monday night, you've been around. Media Day was today. You've talked to these coaches. You've talked to these players. You've watched all these games. What is your general sense now, not just from watching them this season, but how players, coaches are handling themselves? Is there a looseness to one side more so than the other? Is there a confidence? Is the stage playing any sort of role with these teams going in? We're about 48 hours out now.
I think there's more of a looseness to Florida State, and it starts with the leader when Jameis is how he is, which is pretty remarkable to see given that he is. I mean, there'll be occasionally you'll see some guy at a media day who kind of has that personality.
Right.
But he's like the backup tight end or something, you know, like he's not the best player in the country or the Heisman Trophy winner. And, you know, he hadn't been through what he had, you know, everything that had happened around Thanksgiving. So, you know, I think they take their cues from him. I mean, just, you know, you tweet whatever you tweet after he says something or whatever.
Right.
And then you see in your at mentions the venom that comes back.
Right.
And, you know, I remember, you know, after the Heismans, I didn't, because that was the day that Mack Brown got let go, right around that time, I was kind of working on Texas stuff at that point. So I didn't hear all of his speech until he came in. And I remember, you know, people talking about how smart he was and how sharp he was. And, you know, fans just want to think the worst, like he's this complete idiot.
Right.
And if you see him in front of a podium, if you see how he interacts, you know, whatever, you know, he's also a guy who supposedly had a 4.0 GPA and, you know, was on Stanford's radar.
No, he carries himself really well.
Yeah, and I think that's the kind of the engine that's driving Florida State right now.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so you mentioned Media Day. I remember we asked this question to you last year. Any surprises for you up close and personal? I saw you tweeted out about Kelvin Benjamin, how big he is in person. Is that a surprise?
I was near Staples, and I kind of looked over, and I was like, holy shit, how big is he? I've seen, like freaky-looking receivers, but he...
Staples is a big dude himself.
Yeah, he is a big dude, but there's plenty of walk-on linemen who look like they've been to Old Country Buffet, you know, 7 days a week. But... like, I was trying to DeAndre Brown, who played at Southern Miss, was big and long and whatever. I don't know if he was bigger. Those are the two biggest guys I can think of. Like, I remember seeing, you know, Mike Evans is a big guy. He's not as big as this. Mike Williams was a big guy.
USC,
he wasn't as big as this. You know, he's really imposing. Like, Florida State had some of those guys where you looked at and go, damn. You know, like, they look the part.
It was more of an eyeball test for you physically, Florida State passing than Auburn.
Florida State probably. But it takes a few guys like that. Like if you did this last year, there's a guy who's no longer at the Alabama program anymore as a defensive lineman who I think was a pretty big recruit, LaMichael Fanning.
Okay.
And he was the holy shit guy where you look at and go, who is that? And oh, he's the guy who can't really get on the field because he probably, you know, busts assignments or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, really tall, really long arms, just you know, you probably offer a guy by that. Florida State has a bunch of those guys. I mean, Auburn has them too. I mean, it's not like, you know, I remember talking to Montrevious Adams before, you know, today, and he's a freshman who's built like a, you know, a junior.
Right.
So there's those guys and everything.
All right. And when you look at these two teams, obviously questions everywhere, just curiosities because of how strong Auburn finished their season, how dominant they looked, especially on offense, and Florida State really never being challenged. Is there a specific aspect of this game that you're like, this is the linchpin of my interest for Monday night?
I think it's Florida State's defense. Like, not to reference another podcast, but Stu and I did his podcast.
How dare you?
Yeah, it's okay.
I know.
Friend of the show.
I know. So he we're up there, and he talked about how he thought it was a mismatch. Not to quite put words in his mouth, but he said something along those, the first time in a while. And he referenced the defensive stats of, you know, how bad Auburn is pass defense. And I said, you know, like, this is the best year that's probably ever been for SEC quarterbacks. And Auburn faced almost all of them.
Yep.
They faced Manziel. They faced Aaron Murray. They faced McCarron. They faced Mettenberger. I mean, and
even Bo Wallace was good for a lot of the season.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Dr. Bo, right?
And they faced Connor Halliday at Washington State. Not to say he's a great quarterback, but he will skew your stats.
Yes.
So there's all that. But I asked him, I said, have you seen these guys in person yet? And he said, no. I said, well, there's your problem. Because I saw them in the SEC title game against Missouri, who has a legit defense. Yep. They were 14th in the country against the run. And they get caught in all that misdirection. And Auburn gets into a rhythm. And it's just coming at them in different ways. And they're kind of get on their heels. And Florida State has better athletes. I mean, they may not have much better athletes than Missouri has in the defensive line. Mm-hmm. You know, inside they may be a little better. Outside, I don't think they're better.
The Missouri ends are great.
Yeah. But where I think they're better is in the back seven. So we'll see how that holds up, you know.
And they trust the corners on islands a lot more than most teams do.
Yeah, and their safeties give you a lot of different dimensions because they come up all over the place. But, you know, if it's a close game and I'm Florida State, I would worry about that because they haven't been in any close games. And these guys are like believers beyond, you know, the norm of just – hey, the story's already been written. We're living it out. It's like those team of destinies kind of are dangerous, you know. And that's what
Auburn has nothing to lose. They weren't expected to be anywhere near this point.
So no,
we talked about it yesterday, and we have over the course of the season. It was like, oh, Auburn might make a bowl this year. That'd be a great story.
Yeah, and
then we got to the end of the year. It's like, oh, they're actually in the national championship now.
And they had crazy stuff happen, more than one thing. So it's like, hey, something bigger is at work. Just let's go along with it. Okay.
So I guess with that logic then, does the layoff, the longer layoff, kill that momentum for Auburn?
I don't think so. I mean, I think they're gonna hang in it. I just ultimately think Jameis will find a way to give them a close win. I think Jameis is that good.
Yeah.
And the receivers are really, really good. It's like, I don't think there's really any weaknesses on this team. I really don't. I mean, you know, their running backs are deep. The receivers, I think, are, like, LSU has a better 1-2 punch.
Right.
Florida State has a better 1-4.
Right.
And they have a good pass catching tight end. Their offensive line's good. You know, they got playmakers at all three levels of the defense. I just don't see them screwing it up. I think they'll win, but it won't be a blowout.
So you don't think it's a blowout? I mean, there have been previous years where the conventional wisdom was, it seems like it will be close. Last year, like, oh, Notre Dame's front seven, Alabama's offensive line, you should have good push-pull there. And, of course, you don't. Alabama runs – sorry, Ty.
I'm going to leave now?
Yeah, it's okay. We had LSU-Alabama where they play that 9-6 game in the regular season. Like, oh, we'll probably see a little bit more of that. It's 21-0. Never, you know, LSU doesn't cross the 50. You see USC Oklahoma a few years ago when both the big offenses, defensive talent all over the place, not a game.
Right.
So to what extent do you think it will be close? I know you pick like a 4-point game, something like that. Is there a possibility that it's just like, oh, 42-14 Florida State, and they just are that complete and that thorough and that deep?
There's definitely a possibility. I mean, because I think they're a better team than the team that killed Notre Dame last year.
Right. Okay.
You know, I think they are. Because I think they're great everywhere. I don't know if they're great. They're really good everywhere.
There's no discernible weakness for this team.
No, I mean, I don't think so. Unless all of a sudden they like, you know, Jameis has thrown a few picks. Mm-hmm. But I remember like Miami hung with them for a first half. But Miami hung with them for a first half because Stephen Morris threw two of the best passes of the season that anybody threw. You know, it wasn't like these were like wide open receivers. You have a quarterback who has a big time arm.
And Nick Marshall actually is capable of making big throws. He has made big throws.
He's got a strong arm. I think he sprays it, which would, you know, I don't know. I'm less Like, I'm more a believer in the run game than I am in them being able to throw it. But we'll see.
It doesn't mean they can't do it, right?
I
mean,
right.
People love Nick Marshall's arm strength. It is something maybe
he's gotten better over the course
we could
of the
end
season.
Up seeing in the national championship. One of the questions that I know we've sort of posed haphazardly on Twitter, and we're going to interview Bud Elliott here in just a little bit. I'm sure we can get into it a little bit more with him. But Bud, a few weeks back, made a comment about Florida State potentially being the best BCS era team of all time. Now,
or at least most talented.
Most talented. Now, disclaimer, they need to win first.
Yeah, that's a big disclaimer.
They need
by the
to
way.
Win first.
Yep.
But, I mean, I know you're pretty familiar with the great Miami teams. I mean, just looking from afar, what is the comparison? Is there a comparison?
I don't
there?
Know if there's if we can go there yet. The thing that Miami has now, Florida State, if assuming they win,
right.
they win
big
handily,
assumption, but
will have, you know, like Miami had their hands full with Virginia Tech in a game and whatnot. Now they killed Nebraska in the bowl game, but Miami, what they did have was players who went on to have awesome NFL careers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at what Ed Reed did. You look at what Andre Johnson. I mean, they're guys who are like, you know, all across the board that they were big-time guys. I mean, Florida State, you know, Jameis, I think, will have a much better NFL career than Ken Dorsey did. Ken Dorsey was a really good college quarterback.
Yes.
I don't know if there's a running back Florida State has that will be as productive as what Miami had. We'll see if somebody's as good as Andre Johnson. Mm-hmm. I don't think that even, you know, as freaky as Kelvin Benjamin is, I mean, Andre Johnson is like a Hall of Fame kind of talent.
Right.
You know, I think on Miami's secondary, I think was better. You know, you look at them. Now, Mike Rumpf didn't have a great NFL career, but these guys were first-round picks.
Dominant. Sure.
You know, the linebackers, I think, were better. Mm-hmm. It's just, I mean, who is the great player that Florida State has on defense? I don't know. We'll see.
It's true. I mean, Mario Edwards at times looks to be it. I mean,
I think some of these guys.
No dominance.
Some of the tricky part with Individual. Florida State is you're going to look and see Eddie Goldman or some guy who's a five-star guy who, you know, who knows how good he is.
Right.
And there's a lot of guys.
And these are guys surrounded by other top players
I mean,
that make them look.
Florida State has had talent. And, you know, a lot of people define talent as they were a five-star guy in high school.
Right.
I mean, Florida State's had that for 10 years. I'm not sure how talented some of those guys actually were, but they were hyped guys.
Right.
Yeah. And so we'll see what they become, you know, as they go forward.
Okay. And one of the questions we've asked a couple of different people is looking at adjustments and adjustments to adjustments. And that's one of the things that separates good and great coaches. A lot of coaches can game plan really well, but then when they're forced to change things up, they struggle. Obviously, Gus Malzahn has proven himself both as a coordinator and as a head coach to be able to be more than adept at that. And Jeremy Pruitt, in his short time as defensive coordinator at Florida State, has looked very good doing the same thing. Jimbo Fisher's looked very strong this year, hasn't really needed to adjust to a ton of teams. But who do you favor in terms of tinkering, and does that actually matter?
I mean, in this part, I would say Gus Malzahn, I feel like, has a little more of a familiarity with, you know, having done it mm-hmm. on that stage. We'll see with what Pruitt does in this game.
Right.
I think this is a really good proving ground for him. You know, now jumping all over Clemson, and Clemson's got some legit firepower.
Yep.
I think that's the best thing they've done this year. And it's a new staff, so, you know, we're kind of working with a pretty small palette here. So let's see what they do. I mean, the one part that I could see when you were talking about this could be a blowout, mm-hmm. the one part where I could see it being a blowout is they make Nick Marshall have to beat him with his arm, and Nick Marshall starts spraying it around. I mean, he's got arm strength, but I'm a little skeptical on that part of it. So if that's what happens, that could be rough for Auburn.
Okay. So the prediction from Mr. Feltman here, I believe, was 35-31 Florida State?
Yeah, because I think Auburn is going to end up having a lead, maybe even going into half. I think they will get rolling on offense with the run and have, you know, Florida State has enough aggressiveness where I think it's almost like we'll be quicksand. They can kind of be used against them. But ultimately, I think Nick Marshall will struggle with the pass, and I think Jameis won't. And I think their secondary will have problems with that Florida State receiving core.
All right, 35-31 Florida State.
35-31 sounds reasonable.
Should we get
to
trivia?
I feel like we have.
I mean,
to
that's why we
Bruce
brought Bruce on.
Bruce is one of the initial trivia solid verbal contestants. We're talking about
one of the founders of the game here on the
an
show.
An OG, if you will, and that's the last time I'm ever going to say OG on the solid verbal.
So
Bruce, I think the next time on the show,
yeah.
I think I should get to quiz you guys on Uncle Nate trivia.
Uncle Nate trivia.
That's your homework.
Well, being so, I am Uncle Nate. I mean. There's
he
nothing you could ask
things,
that I wouldn't know, right?
Uncle Nate. So Bruce is – we give our guests the option of selecting their wheelhouse, where they feel strongest with trivia.
Right.
Bruce has gotten more specific than anybody else.
There will be people driving off the road listening to this
that
for sure.
We've had on the show. People say 90s pop culture, 90s TV, you know, comedies.
I started that way.
Music.
I started that way. And then
right.
I needed a little
and now you're honing in on what you feel strongest to succeed with. New Jack City trivia.
New Jack City.
Is what we're told.
This
How many times have you seen New Jack City? Dozens?
Not as much as Deep Cover, but probably in the 30s.
Probably in the 30s, yeah. New Jack City.
But I haven't seen it in like 10 years.
But you feel like if you're thrust into a conversation about New Jack City, you can more than hold your own.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
All right, so you're going New Jack City. I'm going to try.
Not at the Staples level of like...
nobody's at the Staples
level. Of like fatty foods and bad movies.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say bad movies because look what I'm offering up.
Right, your New Jack City trivia.
So you're going to do the New Jack City stuff, and I'm going to try and offer a little bit more of
a
variety with
questions.
Let me ask the first one.
Please do.
We're out here now. Do you know any good boogie boarding spots that we could go to?
I recommended one of your fat listeners and tweeted at me, and I wanted to say something, but I can. I think you should go to El Porto.
El Porto.
Yeah.
Okay. There it is. New Jack City trivia.
New Jack City trivia.
By the way, there was a shark there the other day. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. New Jack City trivia. What was Nino's girlfriend's name? I can give you multiple choice, or you can just tell me.
I know the girl they brought home was Uniqua, and they brought her on. She
was
a dancer there.
Not the answer. Girlfriend.
Girlfriend.
I think I saw this once when I was like 9.
I know.
So I'm
going
to be of no help to you.
I know she was light-skinned. I just got such a dirty look from Pete Thamel. He knows what I'm at. He knows what's going on here. He walked by and was like,
And we are sitting here also, silent attendee of this interview, Celebrity Hot Tub, Ryan. One lifeline. Do you know New Jack City? He does not know New Jack City, so probably of little help.
I know she couldn't have kids. Hang on a second.
You want me to give you name options?
Yeah, give me name options.
Selena, Keisha, Janice, Rita. Selena, Keisha, Janice, Rita.
It's not the last two. Selena.
Okay. Selena is?
Correct.
I'm not sure. It didn't tell me.
No, it's correct.
It tells me at the end of the quiz.
He's confident, Dan.
Who killed G-Money? Scotty, the NYPD, man, Nino Brown.
The Dutta man.
The Dutta man, excuse me.
All right. G-Money was Alan Payne's character.
Okay.
Nino Brown.
Okay. We've answered that question. I don't know. I wish I just saw all the answers. This is very...
Well, here, I'll jump in. Again, we're giving you a little bit of flavor here, Bruce.
Right.
Okay. I don't want to make it too specialized.
Straight out of Bethlehem,
I have all
huh?
the answers
just
now, by the
it.
Way. It is Selena was the girlfriend.
Selena. This
Who
is
killed G-Money? Nino Brown.
Thank you.
I'm going to go through these quickly, Ty, if that's okay,
please,
now that I have the
all,
answers.
By all means.
Here we go. What was the name of the drug lord's organization?
Cash Money Brothers.
Correct. Who is the recovering crack addict who went
Pookie.
Undercover for the police? Correct.
Pookie. That's Chris Rock's
question
character,
was not
by the
even
way.
Out of his mouth.
Who is the female enforcer for the drug operation?
It's the other Vanessa Williams. It's Vanessa, like, A. Williams or whatever.
What was the character's name?
Bruce is sighing loudly.
I know. She had all that trunk jewelry on, too.
Sure. I say sure. I have not seen this movie in many, many years.
I don't know. I can see your
eyes. Keisha.
Okay.
Who made the statement, rock-a-bye baby?
She actually did.
Correct. Also Keisha.
Yeah.
What year was New Jack City released?
Oof. I would say 1985?
1991.
Wow.
Who was second in command for the CMB? Again, that's the Cash Money Brothers.
Alan Payne's character, G-Money.
G-Money is correct. Who was the R&B act that was performing at the Drug Lords Club? Correct. What was Ice-T's name in New Jack City?
Ice-T was an undercover cop. What was his name?
He's acquitting himself very well.
This has been one of the more impressive runs
yes.
we've seen, Dan.
Absolutely. CBS has already decided to renegotiate his contract.
Because there's such a demand for this.
Right.
I'm going to ask Dennis Dodd for his...
He's asking for Dodd
for
money.
His disorder,
Dodd
for
money.
His disorderly
Can't live
journey
in a world
now.
Where Dodd makes more money.
Ice-T's name? Do you want...
Yeah, give me a clue.
Starts with an S. Starts with an S.
I've never seen this movie. I can just provide play-by-play.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get it.
It's the first name of a former wrestler who went by Too Hottie.
Scotty.
Scotty is correct. Scotty is correct. Ty, we're gonna pit Bruce's general knowledge answers now because he has proven himself more
He's
than
been,
worthy.
I mean, maybe the best New Jack City New Jack trivia City. Whiz on the planet.
Yeah,
I bet
absolutely.
You I did better than Jerry Palm would.
Bruce Feldman answering New Jack City trivia is now the halftime show.
This is right.
At the national championship game.
All right, so here's some general trivia for you, Mr. Feldman. Sonia Sotomayor.
Uh-huh.
Got her BA at this Ivy League university before going to Yale Law.
You know, these are real questions.
These are real general junior college questions.
You got the wrong guy here.
All right. We're going to go junior college questions.
Thank you.
All right. Here we go. This paper planes artist's father was an active member of Sri Lanka's Tamil Rebellion.
What?
Paper Planes. Do you remember the song Paper Planes?
No.
MIA.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. That's fair.
100 degrees Celsius equals this well-known Fahrenheit number.
No, this is going to make me look really stupid in real life. We need to get your questions.
We okay. need to close my screen down. Yeah. Okay.
This is from Seinfeld.
Okay.
This 8th century group invaded Spain.
The Moops.
It's the Moors, unfortunately. It is the Moors.
I love
Sorry.
That episode.
It's a great episode. George Schroeder specifically asked us to ask you that question. Do you want to go more Seinfeld? Do you want to go?
I mean, where are you at?
Apparently, you go more Seinfeld.
Apparently, Uncle Nate's questions aren't good enough for you, Bruce. So.
Yeah, I know. Uncle Nate is trying to make me look like I have like a 12th grade education.
I don't know the answers to these either. So.
We all kind of do. Right. We're going to go with the 1990 Billboard charts. What
I'll
were you doing in 1990?
I'll dial up some Seinfeld in the internet.
I just transferred to the University of Miami.
Okay. Who? The number one song of 1990 was Hold On by whom?
Wilson Phillips.
That is correct. Okay. Sinead O'Connor.
No, this is not going to be good now.
This is what now?
Okay, go ahead.
Sinead O'Connor.
Can you keep me into like R&B or into like rap?
Okay, fine. Name all three members of Bell Biv DeVoe.
Michael Biv, Ronnie DeVoe, and Ricky Bell.
Correct. That is absolutely correct. Who had a vision of love?
Mariah Carey.
Correct. This, interestingly enough, the number 8 song in 1990, also Hold On by this R&B group.
Oh, En Vogue.
Correct. Bell Biv DeVoe at number 4 was Poison. At number 11, they had another hit single. This was the year of Bell Biv DeVoe, clearly. He is thinking.
This is...
We have some pictures being taken in the background.
Pictures. They're taking pictures of you, Bruce.
Yeah, yeah. Like my head of yeah. thoughts going on.
Another Bell Biv DeVoe single, number 11. We're going rapid fire 1990.
This is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a few Seinfeld ones.
All right,
you've
run out of time. The answer is Doomy.
Okay.
The answer is Doomy. Did you have that, Ryan?
Celebrity
he had
hot
that.
Tub.
Okay,
had that
so
one.
You can. All right. Pump up the jam. Who pumped up that jam?
I know that song. I don't know who.
Pump it.
I know.
Pump,
you hear yeah. it in the NBA arenas. Yeah. I don't know.
Technotronic.
Okay.
Okay. Opposites Attract. Paula Abdul and whom?
MC Scat Cat.
Incorrect. The Wild Pair. Escapade.
Wasn't that the song? Am I thinking of something else?
Yeah. It was Two Steps Forward was MC Scat Cat. I think that's what it was.
Oh.
Okay. Here we go. I think I just asked a question that I already forgot. Escapade was sung by whom?
Janet Jackson.
Correct. Jackson. Yeah. Absolutely correct. Ooh, that's another good one. Okay, here we go. Rhythm Nation?
Janet Jackson.
Correct.
I'm
not. Here and Now?
Luther Vandross.
That is correct. That is very good. Oh, man. There's a lot of good
ones. I got
this
a few
good
Seinfeld
year.
Ones here.
All right. I got one more.
One more, and then we'll close out right. with Seinfeld.
In the Humpty Dance by the Digital Underground.
Good scene.
Where were people getting busy?
I know. You're in a specific bathroom.
Yes.
Burger King bathroom.
That is correct. Wow. That is the correct answer. Ty, jump in.
What restaurant opens in front of Kramer's apartment with an extremely bright neon light?
Kenny Rogers.
That is correct.
That is correct. Little Jerry Seinfeld
is a cock.
That is true.
Okay. Let's see here. What is the vanity plate that Kramer...
Ass man. Yeah.
Wow.
McMurphy struggled with that. He said big ass initially. So his
we
mind...
Know, we know what's on his mind.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
All right.
Let's, makes a lot of fan
whip appeal. Who has whip appeal?
Babyface.
That is correct.
I've actually seen Babyface in concert.
Full name.
Kenneth Edmonds.
Correct.
All right. Let's see here.
Who's going to make you sweat in 1990?
Keith Sweat.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. Keith Sweat with a very literal... Okay. Why is Bismarcky upset? Why is Bismarcky upset that she is just a friend? There is a specific reason that she's just a friend.
Because she's got what he needs.
That is correct. That is the correct answer.
What would have been Kramer's line in a Woody Allen film?
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
That is correct.
Absolutely correct.
Very specific trivia here for Bruce Feldman. I'm all out of Seinfeld.
Thieves in the Temple.
Prince.
That is correct. Menta Rosa. Menta Rosa. I don't know if this has anything to do with R&B.
I don't know this song at
Mellow Man Ace.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have gotten that.
Okay, here we go. Technotronic had another hit song in 1990.
Really?
Yes, they did. It's an upset.
Not a ringing endorsement for Technotronic.
I don't know.
Get up! Exclamation.
I wouldn't have gotten that.
I definitely would not have gotten that. Name two MC Hammer songs.
You Can't Touch This.
Mm-hmm. Bonus points if you can do the visual for another one of his hit songs.
Too Legit to Quit.
Yes. And I can Let's do, see. Can yeah. we? Can we? I'm
gonna. In a non-visual medium. We can describe.
But we
this.
Can it's like two. This.
It's like that.
It's there's
I'm missing
okay.
the middle one.
So it's
that was
too
more,
legit.
Right.
Too legit to quit.
No, there's. A oh, this. Is it? It's this.
Is it the point over the shoulder? It's the neck slash.
The throat slash.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here we
Although
go.
Although the way you did it, it looked like you were waving off a dealer at a blackjack.
Yeah. That is
a little
true.
Bit of that there. So I don't know if he did that. All right, we got time for one more. Let's go one more
you're,
question.
You're
here.
Shooing me out the door?
No. Well, hey, we can stay as long as you want. As All long right. as he keeps getting them right, we can't really.
Yeah, no, he's on too much of a hot streak at this point. We're going to go to 1991. Name two members of Boys to Men.
What the fuck is with you with Boys to Men? It's like every time I see, it's like you get royalties every time you bring up.
They
Sean
take care of
Stockman.
Me.
You're doing as much media as you're doing. You're doing a lot of video. And.
I don't have the answer in front of me.
I don't know. I know Sean Stockman. That's the only one I know.
All right. Name a DJ, two DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince songs.
Summertime.
Correct.
Continue. Parents just don't understand.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. The Power of Love / Love Power, which I find to be a little bit redundant, number 47 in 1991.
I don't know.
It's Luther Vandross.
Oh, okay.
Who is your baby tonight in 1991?
That's a Whitney Houston song.
That is correct. That is absolutely 100%. Things that make you go, who wanted you to go,
Yeah, I know this song.
A lot of people think this situation is a one-hit wonder, at least a two-hit wonder.
Give me an initial.
C. You want another initial? C.
CNC Music Factory?
Correct.
This R&B star sang Back at One.
Ooh.
Brian McKnight?
That is correct. Ding. That is absolutely correct.
This is what we call a heater on the solid verbal.
Yeah. No, the heater's happening. This is a real thing. Name both members of Tag Team.
I can't. I know the one song they had, but that's it.
What's the one song?
Who there it is.
That is correct. It is Steve Roland.
Oh, you know what? He's in the song. Okay.
And DC the Brain Supreme.
All right. I wouldn't have
got DC.
You.
I want to say his name like we're on an NPR show. It is DC the Brain Supreme. That's more Kasem, but whatever. I'll take it.
Which one of the following songs did Blackstreet sing? Nobody Knows. Don't Leave Me. Baby. Baby, 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 and be careful.
I'm going to guess it's one of the babies, so I'll guess it's baby,
Don't
baby,
Leave
baby.
Me was the answer.
Who's down with OPP?
You know me.
Yeah, but who is who is down with OPP? Oh. Yeah.
Sure.
That is correct. There's, okay, Round and Round. Who went Round
Tevin
and Round?
Tevin Campbell.
That is correct. Tevin.
He would actually be a subject of a good story. His career was like this, and then it... Like Usher, like lapped him.
That's true. He was the poor man's Usher.
Spencer Hall should do a story about Tevin
an oral
Campbell.
History of Tevin
yes.
Campbell.
Yes.
I mean, you're an author. This is maybe your next project.
That's true.
Tevin Campbell, out of nowhere, Bruce Feldman, with a Tevin Campbell Bible. The promise of a new day.
I think we're reading every song that was.
No,
written
I'm just reading. Yeah, no, this is happening.
Give me an initial or something.
P.
I don't know.
Paul Abdul.
Oh.
Wow.
What is the name of the Sony record executive that Mariah Carey married?
I was going to say Clive, but it's not. Tommy Mottola.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. This, I mean, I don't know if your life was outstanding in the early 90s or terrible in the early 90s.
It was probably pretty crappy because I was unemployed.
Right.
And I spent a lot of time watching like BET.
Okay. What was it about BET that really drew you in?
What do you want? Want me on the couch now?
Well, I don't know. I'm curious. I have a natural curiosity.
I like the music. I was a big Donnie Simpson fan.
This is probably the best trivia and or just question I've ever asked anybody on this show. Who wants to sex you up?
Color Me Bad.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. Without a second thought.
They were like the genesis of the Dick in the Box scene, weren't they?
Yes, they were. That was their. When you said Genesis, I was picturing Phil Collins, and it was just a very confusing.
But that was their archetype,
yes,
or whatever.
Yes, absolutely. Those glasses and the way they dress.
Thing.
Yes, and the spit curl.
For those listening in the car, Celebrity Hot Tub and I just staring aimlessly at one another, sort of shaking
during
our heads.
Sex you up?
Looking at, well, during the whole, looking
listen,
at our palms,
listen,
sort of shaking.
You know, first of all, he's got a Colorado School of Mines t-shirt on. Mm-hmm. You're all Uncle Nated up here, so like, don't judge.
You can't judge. Who
this
do you
is spin-free zone.
Which media member had a 1991 closest to Color Me Bad's? Just in terms of going out at night and what their social life was like.
In 1991,
or? Who is the current college media members who had a life most similarly?
It's got to be somebody older, because
right, 91.
And Brett McMurphy had a mustache, so I could see some whole like Valley stuff going on with Brett McMurphy.
Color Me Bad, roadie Brett McMurphy. You could see that. Ty, do you have anything else? I feel like that's a good way to go.
I don't know. You know, Brett McMurphy as a roadie in 91 is probably the best we're going to do here to close out this show.
All right. Bruce Feldman, CBS Sports, at the national championship game. What is next after the game? You have recruiting. You have spring practice. What is in the sort of immediate and distant future? You have a book.
I have a book.
What is the book?
It's about Tevin Campbell.
It's not the Tevin Campbell book.
Okay. And maybe we'll edit that out so nobody jumps on that idea.
Yeah.
Can you give us any indication?
It's a book about quarterbacks. It is my version of Meat Market 2, because I always get asked that.
Okay. It's your version of Meat Market 2. When can people generally expect that release?
Like probably 9 months from now.
9 months. So right around the start of the 2014 season.
Yeah, maybe a little later. Yeah,
little later, mid-season, great stocking stuffer.
Sure.
And we will have him on probably 17 to 23 times between then and now, because Bruce really likes Color Me Bad trivia.
No, I didn't expect you to throw that one at me.
Do you have any? What other hits did Color Me Bad have?
You really asking this question?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of. It's not a trivia question. It's a rhetorical. So their last album that they released appeared to be in 1998. Awakening did not chart.
Did they ever have like a phase where Vanilla Ice like, you know, went kind of thrash metal? Did they ever kind of go, hey, it's not working for us in this genre, so.
And it doesn't appear to be the case. It was Awakening, Now and Forever, 96, charted at 113 at a
genres?
Peak. Time and Chance, Color Me Bad, 93, charted 56, but went platinum, it appears. And CMB, which appears to be short for Color Me Bad, topped out at number 3. So that was a good time. Color Me Bad. That's all I have.
That's literally everything
I have to say.
All right. Well, again, his name is Bruce Feldman. You can find him over at CBS Sports. For my co-host, Dan Rubenstein, thanks again for stopping on by.
It's always entertaining.